Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin, back at the helm and live from San Jose. And as usual, Arpin Basu is behind the mic too. Hello, my friend.
Hello. I've missed the soothing sound of your voice.
Yeah.
When you say hello to everyone. Yeah. And you welcome them to The Athletic Support. And I think our listeners we're not entirely satisfied with my voice saying that line. So
right.
Welcome back, my friend.
My pleasure. You did a good job while I was gone. I listened to you. You're good. You can do this all day long.
I can ramble. Yeah. I think sometimes I do that ever. even when you're here, I do that. So
yes,
it's yeah. But I'm glad to have you here. So this is our final episode before the trade deadline. We will have an episode on the day of the trade deadline, but so here we are. We're 5 days out from the deadline. As Marc-Antoine mentioned, he's in San Jose along with the Canadiens. This is the home stretch. The Canadiens dipped their toes, made the one move that I think everyone knew was going to happen. Didn't know what kind of return it was going to be, but the first move of the deadline for Kent Hughes, this edition of the deadline, happened on Sunday, obviously, Evgeny Dodonov going to Dallas for Denis Gurianov. And this is, so we got to talk about this because we've had a thing for Denis Gurianov for quite some time.
Yes.
I went back to our story from October 2020, where we pitched Mark Bergevin offer sheeting Denis Gurianov. Now, here's a chance for Mark Bergevin to get back at me at least a little bit, maybe even you. But, had he done that, that contract would look really bad right now. If Denis Gurianov, under that scenario, turned out the way he's turned out in Dallas since then, this would be a year. He'd be entering his final season of a contract that pays him, $4.5 million a year. And if the Denis Gurianov that we've seen since 2020 was the Denis Gurianov under this contract, that would be like an unmitigated disaster, and maybe Mark Bergevin would have lost his job sooner than he actually did. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true.
But the player is intriguing as hell. Like that's all that to say. There's stuff that he showed that led us to think that, and that stuff is what made Ken Hughes go out and get him, I think.
Yeah, I remember that back when we wrote that little bit, it would still, on the heels of Gurianov, getting to the NHL and trying to find his place at the same time as Roope Hintz. And Hintz, what really took off, even though he's been injured, more than his fair share, but when he's been healthy, he's become a heck of a player, whereas Gorianov has not found his game, has not found his consistency. And so therefore you have two guys, you know, that arrived onto the scene pretty much at the same time, but their path really diverged. And so the Canadians now are taking a gamble on a guy who, it's not just that the organization has soured on him in Dallas, but you go through the number of coaches that try to ignite something under this guy, whether it's at the American League level or in Dallas itself, you know, because he's had Jim Montgomery, he's had Rick Bonus, obviously Peter DeBoer. Mm-hmm. And none of those guys have been able to crack the code with Gorianov. So, and I'm looking at this guy, and it's maybe not the same attributes, but when you look at skills and potential and the toolbox that a guy has, sometimes we mistake that for talent. To me, skills and talent are two different things, because talent is also, how are you able to use those skills? How are you able to get into your toolbox and make it work? And so there's a huge difference between the two. And so maybe the comparison is so, but when I look at Gorianov, I think a little bit of Benoit Pouliot, you know, in terms of a guy who had tons of skills and oh my God, if he only could find that consistency and that, you know, that have that revelation moment that would enable him to put it all together. So Gorianov, so far that's how it's been, and a lot of teams have tried Pouliot over time. The Canadians were one of them, and now I think it's only fair for the Canadians to say we're going to give a chance on a guy for his first change of scenery. We recognize the tools. But maybe it's not a matter of one coach. Maybe it's just a matter of changing organizations, giving a new start, bringing him to Canada, and see if there's something to be done with a guy that purely on a skill level, whether it's the shot, whether it's the skating, obviously the big frame. There's a lot to like in this player. And so it's an interesting gamble in my point of view.
Yeah, it is. Well, especially because of, if you compare the gamble to what Evgeny Dadonov would have produced on the market. Like, I think in an absolute best case scenario, he would net you maybe a third round pick, which is so unlikely. Like, it probably, there's like a 1% chance that if Kent Hughes held on to him until 2:59 PM Eastern time, and that some team was desperate to add a forward that they could play in their top nine, and there wasn't much out there, and the deadline was coming, and the clock was ticking, and Kent stuck to his guns and said, well, I'm only doing it for a third-round pick, otherwise I'll keep him. That's the scenario in which you would get a third-round pick for him. Otherwise, probably, maybe a fourth, probably a fifth-round pick is coming back for Evgeny Dadonov, considering the season he's had. And the only reason Kent Hughes was able to trade him is because of the player's history. It's entirely not based on this season. And, you know, did a little survey of you know, a few pro scouts who watch the Canadians pretty often. And, you know, the premise was on Joel Edmondson, who we'll get to in a bit, but whether his play this season is taken less into account because he has a track record. And so Evgeny Dadonov had the same... You know, I applied the same question to him because his track record is quite good. You know, I think over his previous five seasons, his 82 game average of goals scored is 26. So, you know, a productive player, a player who can play with good players, which he didn't really get a chance to do in Montreal, and a player who can be effective on a power play, which he didn't really get a chance to do in Montreal. So I think the consensus of the scouts was, yeah, kinda. Like, not to the same extent as Edmondson, but yeah, a little bit. So, well, you know, I think looking at Gorianov, you have to compare it to, let's say the likeliest outcome was a fourth round pick. Chances of a fourth round pick becoming a player are far lower than the chances of the Canadians figuring Gorianov out, right? It's
Yes.
It's not, Gurianov is not nearly as big of a lottery ticket as a fourth round pick is. The good thing about a fourth round pick is it give further ammunition for Kent Hughes to move up at the draft. Although he already has tons of it. I mean, it's really not something that he needed. He's got, if I'm not mistaken, I'm just checking it now, but I think they have three picks in the fourth round. Yes, they do. So adding a fourth pick in the fourth round really doesn't move the needle a whole lot.
No.
And so the other part of it is, you know, and this is kind of what I wrote yesterday. This is another double down. Like, okay, we're going to take this guy. He's got these skills that you mentioned. And I like that distinction between skills and talent. Yeah. I think it's very apt. And you know, the big knock on Gurianov was in Dallas was that he didn't have the hockey sense to apply those skills and turn it into talent. And what is the number one belief of Martin St. Louis? That hockey sense can be taught and developed. And Adam Nicklaus doesn't disagree with that. So here you go, guys. Here's your guinea pig. Like, let's see it. You know, yeah. Now is like, this is really the ultimate opportunity. We saw it, you know, we saw it happening with Brendan Gallagher. We saw it happening with Josh Anderson. The results were so-so, I guess, in terms of developing the hockey sense in their game. But now here's a canvas for them to work on, because the skills, as you mentioned, the skills are top-notch NHL skills. It's just a matter of getting him to be able to apply them in an actual NHL game, which has been very, very difficult for Dallas. And as you mentioned, has frustrated every coach that's come into contact with him.
But what's tricky, though, is that this sort of enterprise of trying to, you know, develop a hockey player's IQ is something that can be taught probably over a longer period of time. You need to allow time for the development staff to really figure out the player, make sure that the player is on board and willing to do the work and grow as a player too. This takes time. And I think that the Canadians, to a certain extent, they got Gurianov. He's not about to become a UFA at the end of the season, but there's a part of it where I see Gurianov against Dadonov as potentially a rental for a rental. Because if things don't work out at the end, from now until the end of the season, Gurianov is an RFA. He's got arbitration rights. And his qualifying offer for next year is $2.9 million. If he was going in front of an arbitrator and try to ask for a raise, he'd be hard-pressed to do that because he doesn't have the stats to back it up. But still, at $2.9 million as a QO for next year, if it's more of the same, if we see the same Gurianov in Montreal that the Stars have been dealing with for a few years, well, then the Canadiens could just decide not to tender any qualifying offer and let him go at the end of the mm-hmm. year. So it's got to pan out fairly soon for the Canadiens to say, yep, yeah, we're willing to invest in this player, invest not only money, but time too, and we can see a path where this guy could be a valuable contributor for our team for at least for the next year or two. Maybe not commit to a longer term contract, but, you know, go a little bit by a little bit. But they've got to have a sense for that fairly quickly. So that's why I think it's going to be an interesting project, because it's not because you've got two guys in St. Louis and Nicklaus who believe that hockey sense can be taught and the brain can be developed, that it's going to necessarily translate into something that, you know, that's efficiently improving the player on a short-term basis. So it's going to be interesting to see, but it's clearly, as you said, a doubling down on what the Canadians believe and what they think that they can. It's a way of, you know, turning every stone and trying to find, to some extent, a market inefficiency, saying, okay, well, we think that we can improve a player. It takes what an organization thinks is somebody who's a lost cause, and we're going to approach that player from a different angle slightly and try to see if there's something else that the previous team has not figured out. So let's hope that they do.
Yeah, well, I guess that's their quote unquote gamble. It's not a big gamble. You know, there's not a lot of risk here. One thing about the qualifying offer, one thing about the qualifying offer that I want to make clear is that just because a player has a qualifying offer of $2.9 million does not mean they have to sign him at $2.9 million. If they choose to sign Gurianov, they could offer him a contract that's worth less than $2.9 million, with the alternative being, well, we just won't qualify you. So that option does exist. I think there's a bit of a misconception out there when they see that, you know, Timo Meier gets traded, oh, $10 million qualifying offer. That just allows the player to have some leverage. You know, like the player just say, especially if you're a player like Timo Meier, where if you don't like the contract offers you're getting, well, you'll just say, you know, they'll have to qualify me or else they lose me for nothing. So worst case scenario, I'm planning a 1-year deal at $10 million. So that's good for the player. But in this case, that's not necessarily the case. And you could see what happened with Rem Pitlick in the offseason, who was not qualified at the number he was supposed to be qualified at. Knew the deal kind of the whole time and signed for 2 years at $1.1 million a year. And he was someone who did that. You know, he could have gone to market at age 25, had actually a surprisingly decent season last year. I don't think he would have gotten a crazy contract, but he could have probably signed a contract with someone, a similar type of contract with someone else if he wanted to. He chose to wait it out and stayed because he wanted to play for Marty. And it was a big thing for him. And he wanted that with just about the same amount of time left in the season as Gurianov has. Just a little bit more, but still, it was in February, I think, that he was picked up. And so, oh no, it was in January, actually. So, you know, but still, in that short amount of time, he had decided that Martin St. Louis was good for his game and for him to have success at the NHL level. It was a good thing for him to stick around, you know? And so he actually basically got his qualifying offer. He got a little bit more to sign for an extra year. His qualifying offer for Rem Pitlick was 963. He got 1.1 times two. But I wonder in Gurianov's case, if the Canadians don't go to him and say, okay, we like what we saw. You know, they have a 23-game sample size here to evaluate him. If they're intrigued, if Marty's intrigued, if they see a little bit of progress in the short time, I think you're good to mention that they don't have that much time to actually make a dent in what his game is. The Canadians could approach him and say, hey, listen, you're owed a $2.9 million qualifying offer. Why don't we make it 2 years? $3 million, $1.5 million a year for 2 years. You get an extra $100,000 out of it. You get an extra year to prove yourself. We get a decent cap number. Let's see what happens. So that scenario, listen, we won't know what's going to happen until we actually watch him play with the Canadians, but that scenario exists. It's a possibility. It's not, I don't think Gurianov's necessarily in a place where he can be too, you know, he could be too big for something like that. You know, like, I think he's at a crossroads in his career. He's got to know it at this point because the team that drafted him 12th overall just gave up on him. So it's, so it'll be interesting to see. I think I agree. But the toolkit is really, really something. I mean, I just, you know, in 2020, I was asked to go cover the conference finals and the finals in Edmonton because we couldn't have any American people travel to Canada. So they asked me to go yes. do it. And I was there with Thomas Drance, was the other sort of Canadian reporter dispatched there. And the both of us, like, it was really the Rope Hintz, Denis Gurianov, we thought, coming out party for both of them. And they were both RFAs. And Thomas Drance and I, the whole time, were like, if someone doesn't offer sheet one of these guys, what are we even doing? What is the point of this league, and what is the point of offer sheets if one of Rope Hintz or Denis Gurianov does not get one? Because the Stars were really strapped cap-wise. They had to sign Gurianov, Hintz, and Radek Faksa, all RFAs. They had about $5 million or change or something to do it, which is why we wrote that thing, which is why I pitched it to you. Basically, I think if I remember our brainstorm, I'm like, we're doing a Gurianov offer sheet thing because someone should do it. And no one did. Maybe all the teams saw what has turned out to be the case with Gurianov, and maybe the Stars did too, because they got him on a real sweetheart deal. They got him on a 2-year deal at just over $2 million, which to me it was, no, it's $2.5 million a year for 2 years. And at the time I remember thinking, wow, that's a steal. And it turns out it was an overpay. And then they signed him they gave him his qualifying offer last year on a 1-year deal. And, you know, as I mentioned in the story, he lasted 5 games with what was supposed to be sort of an offensively more progressive coach than Rick Bowness in Pete DeBoer. Mm. And Gorjanov lasted 5 games before being healthy scratched. So let's see. I mean, the thing is that he's not likely to get healthy scratched in Montreal. The way things are right now,
he's more likely to get injured.
Yeah, exactly. He's more likely to get injured. But, you know, I'm just so curious. And I think I agree with you. It's an excellent gamble because there are tools there. But, you know, the source of frustration was that there were games where he just wasn't there. I mean, that's really what bothered all those coaches. And I don't think that's something that Martin St. Louis will tolerate either. So if it's an effort thing, if it's an engagement thing, and that continues, then this coach is not going to be any better for him than any of his previous coaches were. But if there's one thing that the players say about Martin St. Louis is that he has a gift for getting through to them. And so he's going to have his work cut out with this guy, because it's not like we're talking about these sort of journeyman crappy NHL coaches. Like Pete DeBoer, I guess you could call him a journeyman. He's been around, but the quality NHL head coach has been to multiple cup finals, is a very well-respected, good NHL coach. Rick Bowness has coached more NHL games, either as an assistant or a head coach, than any other person in the history of the world. And Jim Montgomery is probably going to win Coach of the Year this year. So it's not like his track record of coaches are guys that don't have a whole lot of credibility either.
All right, well, let's move on. It's because I think that Gorjanov, we'll see him. He's going to play his first game in the Canadiens uniform on Tuesday night in San Jose, wearing number 25. So I'm excited to see what he brings. And, well, Evgeny, we hardly knew you. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm going to miss you. Dadanov, well, yeah, we probably did one of his last interviews. I bet you he didn't. Remember when we talked to him about getting traded?
Yeah.
When was that? Just before they left on this latest trip, not the California one that you're on, the one to Carolina.
Before they left for Toronto, and then Toronto, and then New Jersey and Philly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Before they left for Carolina. So they were on their way to Carolina.
Right.
And, you know, and what did he say? What was the great line? He's like, I don't like to talk to my agent too much.
Yeah.
So I'm presuming, I don't know actually, but I'm presuming Dallas wasn't on his no trade list. So maybe he didn't have to talk to his agent about this. So, yeah. But anyhow, happy trails to Dadonov. And I honestly think the Stars, this is a good gamble for the Stars too. DeBoer knows Dadonov from their time in Vegas together. And, you know, despite them trying to trade him, you know, he came back and produced. He was actually a good player for Vegas, and they were trying to get into the playoffs. And they kind of found their way a little bit after that whole fiasco surrounding the Dadonov trade. And he produced. He was almost a point-a-game player after that, all that. So that's – and one thing that his teammates have said about him is that he is – he is serious. You know, he's a guy who cares. He wants to play and he wants to win. And so this is an opportunity to do that. And that was the one thing he kept like tiptoeing around all the trade talk. But once he was asked, wouldn't you welcome an opportunity to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs? The answer was immediate. It's like, yes, 100%.
This is what you're in the NHL for, he said.
Yes, exactly.
And from a Stars perspective, well, they also save $400,000 because the Canadians have retained half of Dadonov's salary. So they still have $2.5 million in the books for the remainder of the season. Each organization is allowed to have three trades or three transactions that involve salary retainment. So the Canadians have used one of them. So, you know, it's you have to use those wisely and not start thinking that you can spread that around and retain on everything that you do. Do you have only three trades, three slots, retention slots, basically, that you can use for that. So Dadonov is the first for the Canadiens. Let's see if there will be others. I'd like to bring this conversation to Joel Edmondson, because after being more than a month on
day-to-day
injured guy, he unexpectedly, to a certain extent, made the trip out west. For all intents and purposes, he'll be on the ice in a couple of hours and will be practicing with the Canadiens. So there's a chance that he might play this week, and that he, you know, there's a possibility of two games that he could play. Obviously Tuesday in San Jose and then Thursday night in LA. Two games to showcase himself, to prove that he's healthy-ish, healthy enough to contribute and help a team down the stretch. We discussed that in the past, thinking that it was probably not enough of a runway for him to reassure potential bidders. But yet we hear that the Edmonton Oilers are kicking tires yet again on Edmondson. There will be other suitors. There are teams that are looking for defensemen, guys that can block shots, guys who can box out, guys, bigger defensemen who really show their worth come playoff time. So there's always a market for those teams, for those players at this time of the year. And now, just to prove my point, the Toronto Maple Leafs just acquired Jake McCabe. So he's one of the guys that that could fit that bill to a certain extent. He carries a longer contract than Edmondson, but he and Sam Lafferty went from Chicago to Toronto in a package that includes a first round pick for 2025. But realistically, Arpin, from the idea that what the Canadiens could have gotten for Joel Edmondson had he been healthy, versus what they can hope to have at this point now, where he's gone probably down the priority list for a lot of teams who might have looked at McCabe first, who might have looked at Gavrikov in Columbus, maybe even Luke Shen before Edmondson. What can the Canadiens really, hope to get at this point for this guy if they manage to find a taker before Friday?
The Luke Shen thing is interesting, because I think if Edmondson were healthy, he might be slightly ahead of Luke Shen, but because he's not, he might be slightly below him. But similar sort of profile, right? I mean, I think they're both firmly in the Plan B group, and Edmondson's health definitely hurts the Canadiens' chances of getting full value for him. But what helps the Canadiens' chances of getting full value for him is that they don't feel the need to trade him. They really don't. This is a very much an Arturi Lehkonen type of situation in that sense. The difference being that when the Canadiens would say, well, we just won't trade Arturi Lehkonen, it's because they sincerely would have wanted to keep him. I think Marte St. Louis was in love with him, fell in love with him very, very quickly, just because of everything he does. And he had become kind of a whipping boy because of his inability to finish chances in Montreal, but he was a coach's dream, and the Canadiens felt no obligation. And in fact, I believe Marte St. Louis was under the impression he would not get traded. And Justin Barron was offered at the very last minute, and Ken Hughes couldn't say no to that. And frankly, good for him. Watching Justin Barron the last little while, he's looked very promising. So I think they're in a similar situation, but they're not in a similar situation in the sense that, yes, the Canadiens would like to keep Edmondson, but there's a number of reasons why moving him makes sense and would actually help the Canadiens. A, obviously for the return, that goes without saying. B, they're looking at a bit of a logjam on the left side suddenly. You have Matheson's there. Matheson's playing some excellent hockey over the last few weeks since they came back from the break, basically.
Yeah.
Caden Gooley's going to be back in the lineup on Tuesday. You want him playing on your left side, not on the right side the way he was, earlier when they had to. You have Jordan Harris. You have Arbor Jack High. If you add Edmondson to that mix, that's five left shot D that in an ideal world you'd like to have playing. So something's got to give there. And of all those five guys, the one guy that they don't see any, they shouldn't have any reason to play for future from a future standpoint is Edmondson, because next year obviously be entering the final year of his contract. Plus with his health situation being what it is, his back being what it is, there's no guarantee that he will be healthy at next year's trade deadline in order to get you the prime rental return. And in order to get the prime rental return, you'd have to play him all season. And in which case, one or even two of those guys that I mentioned earlier don't play. So it's not – so smart teams who are talking to Edmondson – if they hear Kent Hughes say, well, we just won't trade him, they'd be smart to call that bluff. Because I think the Canadians would much rather move this guy by Friday, much more so than they would be letting on in any conversation with anyone. Because I think the Canadians feel that their leverage in this case is that they just don't have to trade him. But the reality is, for several reasons, they kind of do.
Yeah, well, when you think of, you know, the fact that he's been out for a month now, and usually their return to play protocol has different steps, right? The no contact jersey, practicing with the team, whatnot. And there's a variety of-
First step is being on the ice with a trainer, which Edmondson has done.
Yeah.
But then I believe there's a next step where he's on the ice with the hockey development people, Scott Pellerin and Adam mm-hmm. Nicholas. And I don't know if he's done that, but-
But yeah, I guess my point is going from the status that he was in, you know, so very recently, to the possibility that, heck, he might even play tomorrow night for all we know. So, but the rush that the Canadians seem to be in to put him on the ice suggests that the intent to trade him is clearly there. And I wouldn't even be surprised if he's still with the Montreal Canadiens at the end of the week, that they scratch him after that, say, you know what, try to get healthy again.
Yeah, exactly. No, that would be the way to go. I mean, honestly, like that's, and then try to move him at the draft. I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world for the Canadians if they don't trade him by Friday. I just think it makes things a lot simpler. And, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned the Jake McCabe deal. The one thing that's worth mentioning is that they get a first round pick out of that and a second in 2026. I mean, these are all very, very, very much down the road, but they also retained money on Jake McCabe for this season and next. So that is a big reason why. And so maybe if Montreal agrees to do that this season and next, they could maybe get a similar return. If you're getting Joel Edmondson at $1.75 million this year and next year, maybe. I don't know. But you're not getting a 2023 first-round pick. Like, that's for sure. Sorry, they retained on Jake McCabe for two more years after this one.
I stand correct. I don't think the Canadiens would do that.
I think they... I mean, if a first-round pick was on the table, I think they would consider it. I think they would consider it, but that's the only scenario in which they would consider it.
Yeah, but McCabe at this point is a better hockey player, more effective than Edmondson.
Yeah, I understand that, but you're getting, I mean, yeah, I understand that. I mean, listen, they got a lot more than just a first round pick.
I agree.
They got a first, a second. Really, Joey Anderson's a useful player, and you know,
Lafferty's credentials have improved the last couple of years. I mean, he's starting to make a name for himself as a very useful depth player and the sort of guy that any team in the playoffs would be interested in getting. So I'm not surprised because they're really beefing up, you know, their fourth line, and because the Maple Leafs have always been very top heavy. And this is the sort of guy that really strengthens their bottom six. And now, that's the most striking difference looking at those Maple Leafs from now compared to maybe, you know, the Spezza years and the Joe Thornton years, you know, of 3-4 years ago. It's that their bottom six is a lot stronger for playoff hockey.
Yeah, but if you dole out all the value that Chicago got in that deal, So I would put the 2025 first round pick on McCabe, the 2026 mm-hmm. second round pick on Lafferty, and then Joey Anderson and Pavel Gogolev, some combination of them, are compensation for holding or for retaining money on McCabe, basically. And so it's like it's that's how I kind of parse it, because they're getting these playoffs plus two more years with Jake McCabe, and Jake McCabe is a younger, better version of Joel Edmondson, frankly. But it's so I guess you could say that if 2 years plus at half price of Jake McCabe is worth a first round pick and Joey Anderson, let's say. Yeah, you might be right. I mean, maybe getting a first for Edmondson is not realistic, but again, if it's 2 o'clock on Friday and a team like, well, whatever team is looking to shore up their defense and they've seen the moves that have happened around them happen and they get really desperate, maybe you get that first round pick. Not in 2023, I don't think, but down the road, maybe. And by that point, if Joel Edmondson has played 2 games and looked reasonably good, or it's like something like what Joel Edmondson looks like, because one thing that's, again, I mentioned it earlier, but one thing that's clear is that whatever Joel Edmondson does now doesn't change his value. All he has to do is go out there and survive a game and be healthy at the end of it. Because people seem convinced that whatever he's done in the playoffs is far more valuable than whatever he's done this year and whatever he could do prior to the trade deadline. Like, that seems obvious, that hockey people in general are evaluating this guy based on what he did in 2021.
I'll shock you, Arpin, but Edmondson and McCabe are the same age. They're both 29. And that's the thing.
Right?
Yeah. And it's not about
Edmondson
McCabe
just
being
feels
20.
Old. Yeah.
Well, it's just that Edmondson, we perceive him as being so much older than he really is. Edmondson's only 29. So
that's true. But his back is like 46. Like, that's the problem. So,
yeah. Anyway, I think it's a nice segue, because you mentioned the possibility of you know, getting a first round pick for Edmondson, which I don't think is really conceivable anymore, but who knows. We've got we had a question from a listener, so pretty much on that topic. So let's listen to it.
Hey, Arpin, my son and I love your articles and podcasts. Here's a question for you. What do you think it's going to take for Kent Hughes to get a third first-round draft pick in the 2023 draft?
All right, Arpin, so that question was addressed to you and you only, because I don't exist anymore.
So. No. Okay, so I'm going to explain. So I think on Friday, you know, you claim that you listened to the episode. I don't think you did, because on Friday I mentioned that on Monday I wasn't sure if you would be here or not. And so that I might have a guest host, I might go alone again. So I think that's where that came from. Because your status was, you were day to day for this show. So,
aren't we all?
Yes. So, but anyhow, thank you for the question. And yeah, exactly. We just finished talking about it. I mean, I'm under the impression, I'd be stunned if Josh Anderson were traded by Friday. I'd be pretty shocked. It's not impossible, but it would surprise me. To my eyes, that's the only real asset that could bring back a first round pick. Edmondson is a possibility, maybe, but you need like a really specific set of circumstances all to happen for that to happen. And the odds are not very good. If Anderson were made available this week and someone in the Eastern Conference would look at the Rangers adding Tarasenko and in all likelihood Patrick Kane by Friday, the Devils getting Timo Meier, the Leafs getting O'Reilly, the Bruins loading up. I mean, it's just the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be amazing. They're going to be so great. The first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs is going to be the best hockey of the year. But if one of those teams that hasn't really done anything yet, and you know, I'm thinking of Carolina. Um, Pittsburgh, maybe, but their cap situation's a mess. Buffalo, if they're right there. Detroit. I can't see Florida doing it because obviously their first round pick has already been traded. God, what a mess they're in. But so if one of those teams, and really Carolina, because the one thing about Josh Anderson, and I spoke to a few scouts on this, and one of them made a really good point, is that he needs to go to a team that's a stylistic fit. And one of the teams that would be a stylistic fit is the Carolina Hurricanes. And they just missed out on Timo Meier. So they do have some desire to get bigger on the wing and add a power forward type. Josh Anderson is not Timo Meier, let's be clear, but obviously wouldn't cost as much as what the Devils paid to get Meier, which, shall we just say, wasn't that much, really, for a player who's under team control. They managed to get Timo Meier without trading Alexander Holtz, and I'm really wondering how they did that, but good for them. Good for Tom Fitzgerald for doing that. Carolina was in on that and missed out. So does Josh Anderson become interesting to them? And again, Ken Hughes is in a position where he doesn't have to trade the player and actually has, and will definitely not retain money on the player, but doesn't really have to at that number. Maybe Josh Anderson, maybe. But it's, again, I'd be shocked. It would really be surprising if that happened.
I think if the Canadians trade Josh Anderson, it would likely be for a player more than a pick. Because they, you know, there's always been this sense with Kent Hughes that he will try to find ways to accelerate the rebuild and potentially looking for prospects and guys that have already been drafted and that could help the team in a shorter order than just a draft pick. And you lose a guy like Anderson, you would want to get an asset that you would be able to insert in your lineup in not too long. So I think that Anderson's a good trading chip if you're looking at a specific prospect, whether it's in goal, whether it's for a defenseman, a right-handed defenseman, maybe a younger version of Anderson that's probably not in the NHL yet. Who knows? But for a pick, yeah, why not? We cannot exclude it. But the way that just to answer the question of our listener, I think the other way that has not been discussed, that doesn't seem to be considered, is that if you think that the assets you have are not quite enough to get you a first-round pick, can you attach a second with an asset in order to get a first? So that way, the team that's buying doesn't lose a whole lot in terms of draft picks, because they get a second round pick in return plus a player. So it doesn't have to be so. You know, so that way, the asset that you're giving apart from the second round player might not be as significant. But whether it's a Christian Dvorak or a guy like that, then it's probably, if you add a second round pick to what you're offering, then it's a lot more plausible to get a first round pick in return.
Well, that, and if they're adding their own second round pick, which I think is all they have right now,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, so then it's just not worth it. I mean, if you're proposing, let's say you're dealing with the Hurricanes, right? Or anyone in the top five of the league. So Boston, Carolina, New Jersey, Toronto, Tampa.
No, you would do that. You would do that for a bubble team, because otherwise there's no point in trading 28 for 35.
But I don't think a bubble 36. Team. I don't think bubble team is trading for Josh Anderson right now. I mean, it's possible, I suppose. It's possible bubble team goes for it, but it's if I'm in the East right now and I'm not one of Boston, Carolina, New Jersey, Toronto, Tampa, or New York, I'm wondering if it's worth it, if this exercise is even worth it their while. Honestly, like it's what are we fighting about? What are we looking for? If you're the New York Islanders, for instance, everyone kind of assumes, oh, they got Bo Horvat, they're all in. Well, they signed Bo Horvat, so they have him. So they're not worried about what they have to do. I mean, Pittsburgh's really the one team where there's so many external forces at play that they might do go for it and do something wacky to try and go for it and get back into this arms race. But other than them, you know, like I mentioned Buffalo earlier, I think Kevin Adams is taking kind of the right approach. Like all the comments I've seen from him are like, listen, we're a bit ahead of schedule, but we're not going to blow up the plan just because we have a chance of making the playoffs. Because frankly, if Buffalo makes the playoffs, like I can't see any of these teams winning a round. Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Islanders, Detroit. You know, it would be great for Detroit to make the playoffs. It'd be great for Buffalo to make the playoffs. It means the rebuild is sort of is moving in the right direction. But
well, there's
if,
always
if Josh sense, Anderson though. Goes, if Josh Anderson goes, he's going to one of those top teams, I think. And New York's already made their move. Tampa, in a way, has already made their move with Janot, who's not a comparable player to Anderson. And let's get that out of the way actually while we're on the subject. When Tampa gave up 5 draft picks and Cal Foote, like Cal Foote's getting forgotten in that deal, but a player who himself was a pretty high draft pick.
Yeah.
To get a guy in Tanner Janot who is, you know, a borderline top 9 forward, but a guy who brings sort of a rugged game. Everyone was like, oh, well, if Tanner Janot could get 5 draft picks, wonder what Josh Anderson could get. And it's just like, it's just not the same thing. First of all, Janot makes $800,000 this year. He is an RFA at the end of the year. He's eligible for arbitration, but he's not going to make $5.5 million like Josh Anderson does. Anderson's contract to me is not prohibitive for a player like that. It's not something that would prevent a team from acquiring him. Because I think he has a certain value. It's not as if he doesn't, like, he's scoring goals this year. He's a different player in the playoffs than he is in a regular season. And he fits a certain style of play really well. That sort of chip and chase, straight line, more of a basic style of hockey, which Carolina actually plays. That suits him. But you're also asking a team to take on a guy for $5.5 million, and that kind of mitigates his value. The value of Janot is he is who he is at the price that he's at. That's why Tampa gave up all those picks. They've done it with Hagel. They did it with Blake Coleman. They did it with Nick Paul.
With Nick Paul's actually
Barkley Gaudreau. Well, they wound up losing Barkley Gaudreau, but still, like, Nick Paul's the guy I thought of immediately when they made this deal. Nick Paul was going to be an RFA. They bring him in. They overpay for him slightly, but then they sign him at a reasonable number. This is the model that Tanner Janot is following. And so Josh Anderson is not that player. He's not a player who is cost-effective, who gives a certain amount of cost certainty, and who can attract a haul like that because the demand for him is so high because of that cost certainty and because of that low salary. In this cap climate. And this is a big reason why the Canadians are not eager to trade Josh Anderson, is because a year from now, at next year's deadline, the cap will be on the verge of going up significantly. Whatever debt the NHLPA had left to the NHL from the pandemic will have been paid. The cap will once again be tied to revenues. League revenues are on the rise. We'll see what happens with this whole regional sports network thing going on in the States, but they are on the rise. The cap is set to go up in, what would that be, 2024-25? Am I correct in saying? Yeah, 2024-25. Yeah. So when that cap goes up, Anderson's value goes up for the same reason that we were just mentioning with Janot, is that his cap number then becomes more manageable and more absorbable, and therefore his value gets higher.
Yeah, and yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, and as for the Lightning, they've been trading for cap certainty at a lower price. So it's not just comparing players or styles or whatnot or statistics. It's really apples to oranges because of the cost certainty. Whereas, yeah, if you want to add Josh Anderson, you really have to first have the money to fit him in, and it excludes a bunch of teams. So
Not Carolina.
Just saying. But yeah, I know. But there's also the whole Western Conference. You know, you might, I know that all the big guns are in the East this year. It's so lopsided, but there are teams out West that will say, you know what, maybe that the coast is clear for us to try to get better. Well, and there's a path opening up at least to the finals before we get crushed.
No, but honestly, if I'm a Western Conference team, I'm looking at what's going on in the East and I'm saying whatever team comes out of the East, they're going to be banged up. Like that's going to be a war to get through three rounds of playoffs in the Eastern Conference is going to be difficult. And whoever does it, kudos, but they will be running on fumes by the time they get to the Cup final. And frankly, some of the top guys in the West, yeah, I mean, they might have an easier time of it, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think I was thinking about that the other day, that everyone kind of assumes that the Eastern Conference, whoever comes out of the West will lose to whoever comes out of the East. I'm not so sure. It's going to look, I wouldn't be surprised if whoever comes out of the East will have already played 21 playoff games at that point.
Yeah.
That wouldn't shock me one bit. So that's tough. That's going to be difficult. But listen, before we go, I want to finish the pod with just a quick discussion of what we brought up in the notebook, which was the notion of getting Christian Dvorak's name out there. You know, this was your idea for the notebook. Not to tell everyone how the sausage is made, but often we break up the notebook and Marc-Antoine will write some bits, I'll write other bits. And so you wrote the bit on Dvorak. I thought it was quite good. So make your argument of why Ken Hughes should be getting his name out there more than he has. And I'll just preface it by saying, I asked Christian Dvorak this week, or last week, I should say, if Ken Hughes has had the same conversation with him as he's had with Joel Edmondson and as he's had with Josh Anderson regarding the deadline. And he said he hasn't, and that he's not actually thinking about the possibility of being traded. Didn't seem to be on his radar whatsoever. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with the disclaimer that I know that Christian Dvorak is not the fans' favorite player. He's underwhelming offensively. He's not a spectacular player to look at. He came at a high cost. The Canadiens paid a first-round pick to acquire him. He was asked to replace Philippe Dano, which is a task that he was not up for. But he remains a decent player, an average player in a lot of ways, but a useful player. And this is a time of the year where centermen and defensemen, there's always going to be a market for those guys. And you look at the Canadiens right now, they've got a depleted lineup. That's true. I mean, Kirby Dach is out. Sean Monahan is out. Evans, too. They're really thin in the middle. But if you look at next year, they would have, if we consider that the emergence of Kirby Dach this season at center is something that they're going to build with, and that this is going to be the starting point next year, and that he's not going to be yo-yoing all that much between center and wing, and they can build up with Dach as a centerman, then you can have Suzuki and Dach as your top two centers. And if it relegates Dvorak for third line centerman duties all day long, well, there are ways to replace this guy. We've discussed the possibility that Sean Monahan could be brought back at a discount as another show me contract, another show me season with hopefully better health, and try to do next year what they were hoping to accomplish this year. Monahan could be your third line center. They could get a third line center on the market that would not cost them $4.5 million a year. Right now, it's just a matter of reading the market and saying, okay, who are teams looking for? What are teams looking for? And Dvorak, for however underwhelming he might seem to some people, I think he could be very useful to some teams who are looking for a guy that can play on the PK, that can win his faceoffs, and that you can really move around on in your lineup. You can even play him on the wing if you need to. But he's a guy that really adapts his play to whoever he plays with. You put him with offensive type wingers, he'll become a more offensive centerman. He can be a shutdown defenseman. He's a bit of a chameleon in that sense. And at $4.55 million for the next 2 years, his contract is very palatable. So there are, again, with that amount, with that number, there are teams that would consider that difficult to integrate a player like this. But others would say, you know what, having a guy that we could fit on our second line or on the third line for two more years, that's worth something for us. So I think that there are reasons for the Canadians, I think, to explore that possibility, considering what they could get for him, and considering also that there are ways to replace him, if not for the end of this season, at least for next season. So I think it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, market forces being what they are. I think it's not unreasonable to consider the possibility that someone who needs, because the center market is just played out so perfectly for the Canadians to have Sean Monahan available. Like, honestly, like, had he been available, which, by the way, he clearly will not be. I don't think they're going to trade Sean Monahan because his health status is very much up in the air. Mm. You know, if they're able to trade him, great. And if they do trade him, it would be as a favor to Sean Monahan, frankly. Like, they're not going to get a big return at all. If a team's willing to roll the dice by sending a late round pick, hoping that Sean Monahan gets healthy, the Canadians would probably do it just to help Sean Monahan out and give him a chance to play, maybe get in the playoffs, maybe get healthy in time for the playoffs, maybe create some sort of value for himself, and be able to go out and get a decent contract in the summer. Maybe even with Montreal, who knows? I mean, it's not looking clear. It's not looking like, you know, Sean Monahan's going to be a trade. If he's traded, it's not really going to help the Canadians in any material kind of way, other than them doing him a favor. But if the market's all dried up and there's a team like, I don't know, the Colorado Avalanche who needed a center, you know, maybe a couple of other teams, but they're the one that really jumps out because they're the one who was linked the most to Monahan all season. Maybe they look at a guy like Dvorak and be like, okay, well, he doesn't move the needle as much as Monahan would have. It definitely doesn't move the needle like Kadri did for us last year, but, you know, he can take some difficult minutes and free those up.
Yeah, and he can be interchangeable with JT Comfort, you know, so.
Yeah, so maybe it's appealing. I mean, the number, as you said, is reasonable, but it's not nothing. You know, it's still a number that's not actually commensurate to his numbers in terms of production. You know, Dvorak does not produce like a $4.5 million player should produce, but still, he does other things, wins you draws, kills penalties, does a whole bunch of other things that are valuable in the playoffs for sure. So we'll see. I don't know what I don't know. I can't tell what my level of surprise would be if Christian Dvorak actually moved by Friday. I would say, if I would be like 70% surprised if Josh Anderson moved, I would put Dvorak at like 40%.
Okay.
I don't think it would surprise me. I don't think it would surprise me as much as an Anderson trade, personally.
Right. Not to mention for Dvorak, he's got a no trade clause that kicks in this summer. Well, it's not a big one. I mean, he's got 18 no trade lists, but it gives you more flexibility until then if you want to move him to trade him wherever you see fit. So it's always an added bonus. All right, everybody. Listen, this is on Friday. Obviously, we're going to have our French episode of Le Sport Athlétique, but we also we wanted to draw your attention towards another podcast that's in our stable, and that's going to be certainly promising for everybody. This Friday, we'll have a live trade deadline recap show with Ian Mendez and Haley Salvian. That's on the Athletic Hockey Show YouTube channel, but also on Facebook and on Twitter. And it starts at 2:30 Eastern time, 2:30 p.m. So that's a special edition, a live trade deadline recap show of the Athletic Hockey Show. So make sure to listen to that. And afterward, later on in the day, well, you can tune in to the Athletic support, and we'll be there to discuss in French everything that will have unfolded surrounding the Montreal Canadiens. Until then, Arpin, wish you a good week. Stay safe.
Enjoy California, my man. And we'll talk to all of you on Friday.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, bye-bye.